When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for radio and now in its 26th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Tesla Motors is into hot water again for what its self-driving beta software will do and won't do, and we'll have all the details for you. At the same time, a new study finds that first-time electric vehicle buyers are enjoying the new experience. We'll have much more about that coming up. There is some good news for Tesla there. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at MercuryInsurance.com. Hi, I'm Jack DeRed. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. Each week we get together to talk about something we are passionate about. That's cars. And Chris, how are things with you this week?
I am passionate about cars, Jack. Things are going well this week, but I'm also passionate about the weather, which we generally do talk about. We are here in the, we call it the brown part of winter, where all the snow has been coated in sand and everything looks a little gloomy. But otherwise, looking forward to a good week driving. And how are things are going on your side of the world?
Things are going swell. You know, spring is right around the corner. I'm excited about baseball starting. It's still a ways off, but I'm a baseball player, so I love that sport. And that's coming up. We also have a terrific guest, changing gears totally. We have a terrific guest. Our special guest is Dan Ahern. He is the senior manager of a company called Car Bravo. It is within General Motors. It's a new General Motors effort to give consumers an interesting way to buy a used car. And this includes non-GM used cars. So kind of fascinating that General Motors is getting into the used car business in this way. So we'll get details from Dan on what this means to you. In the road test segment, Chris, what vehicle will you be talking about this week?
I drove the 2022 Honda Civic Si. Very exciting.
It sounds exciting. I bet you had fun with that. And I hope you had enough clear roads to really get a good shot at that.
Kind of. We'll talk about it.
Okay. Well, I got a chance to drive something that was very exciting, the all-new 2022 Kia EV6. As you can tell from its name, it's an electric vehicle. I was at their introductory driving event recently, so we'll discuss that vehicle at some length. But before that, we'll be bringing you some of the most important car-oriented news from around the world, so stay with us for that. Tesla news is coming up next, right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague with you, and it is news time, and boy, we have news. Of course, Tesla Motors, always in the news, and here is the latest. Tesla is going to recall more than 50,000 vehicles that have the company's full self-driving beta software. Full self-driving isn't really full self-driving, by the way, but we'll chat about that. Some of the models that have this do rolling stops at stop signs. They don't come to a complete stop at a stop sign. And the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is a bit cranky about that. So it's asking Tesla to recall a bunch of vehicles. And this sounds like a bad thing. And we have criticized Tesla before about their beta testing of self-driving software. Number one, what's your take on that, Chris?
Well, I can see in the real world, a use for rolling stops. I don't know of a better way to put that, but I think it's illegal pretty much everywhere. In fact, I got a pretty large ticket in high school many, many years ago for rolling stops, and that was without autopilot. I'm sorry, full self-driving, not autopilot. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of a gray area, but I do think it's probably best that it not be built into a system that works on its own. So I think that just encourages or opens up more opportunity for accidents. So hopefully they fix it.
Yeah, I think the larger issue is beta testing something out in the real world that has to do with safety. I just don't think that's a really great idea. In this instance, I think it sounds worse than it actually is. It's not that vehicles go whizzing through stop signs. Teslas go whizzing through stop signs at 30 or 40 miles an hour. They slow to less than 2 miles an hour. This according to Elon Musk, who tweets about this. And we're probably all guilty of that at one time or another, not coming to an absolute complete stop. But I think just the optics of this are bad. And again, I don't think that beta testing safety equipment with real human beings is a really great idea.
There are reasons why automotive engineers and test drivers are trained, and there's a reason why they mostly test on closed courses. And when they do test in public, they're in very, you know, elaborately marked vehicles. So that it's no secret what they're out doing. But just any Joe Tesla owner or Susie Tesla owner can sign up for this program and take a little bit of an assessment, and then they're testing these vehicles. As you say, on the public roads, it is a little bit frightening to think about the, you know, how things could go sideways pretty quickly.
There will be a recall of these Tesla vehicles. They will fix them. I think they will fix them with over-the-air updates. So it's not really too onerous for anybody, for Tesla or for their owners, to get this fixed. And then we won't have vehicles just slowing down to 2 miles an hour and going through stop signs. I think that also points out a big problem. Certainly it's a big problem in my area of people just ignoring stop signs, whether they're in Teslas or not. I see a lot of people just blowing through stop signs almost routinely these days, and it's pretty frightening.
Yeah, it's even more frightening, as I said earlier. It's more frightening to think about a car just doing it on its own. But, you know, 2 miles an hour or less, as you say, it could be a little, I think some people are making a little bit bigger of a deal out of this than it should be. But, you know, again, predictability is key when the car is in control of itself.
So, on a brighter note for electric vehicles, there is a new J.D. Power study about electric vehicle owners, of the vehicle ownership experience. It's called the 2022 U.S. Electric Vehicle Experience Ownership Study from J.D. Power. And one of the things they found is that first-time owners of battery electric vehicles are discovering it's a positive experience. I guess that's good. Interestingly, satisfaction among owners who are new to battery electrics are higher than those people who have had battery electric vehicles before. I don't know whether there's just a honeymoon period there or what that's all about, but there also is a distinct learning curve when you have to become familiar with driving range, something you and I have talked about quite a bit. That can be a major problem. You can get yourself into real trouble, I think, if you're not paying attention to your driving range when you're at the wheel of an electric vehicle.
Yeah, that's the biggest change for me, even testing electric vehicles. But it's encouraging to hear you say that, because, you know, the J.D. Power studies that we've talked about in the past, a lot of people tend to complain about new technology and complain about new interfaces and things. And electric vehicles, in a lot of ways, are a radical departure with the technology inside. So even with the learning curve, I'm encouraged to hear that people are happy with their vehicles with the new technology. And, you know, the quiet operation, instant torque, all those things are just, they're bonuses too. But as I mentioned, the tech seems to be a big hang up for people. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Yeah. One of the things where we've seen a great increase in satisfaction is in battery range, you know, range on a full charge of batteries. Driving ranges continue to improve, and that has everybody pretty happy about the whole thing, because you're less dependent on charging and charging at public charging stations occasionally, which can be very problematic. So that is a good thing. Also, battery electric vehicles from traditional brands are helping to attract even more first-time buyers. This according to the author of the study saying that. Here's something I found interesting too, and it's about incentives. They certainly are things like federal tax credits, for example. There's certainly a key incentive to purchasing such a vehicle, but what I wasn't sure about and found out in the study is a lot of people have difficulty receiving the tax credit. It's something that they kind of have to fight for, which is a bit disappointing, I guess. But when you talk a bit about bureaucracy, I guess it's logical to assume that's going to happen.
It is, and I assume, or I know from, you know, anecdotal stories around here that people have trouble getting the state level incentives as well. And it also goes for things like charging stations. So there's some rebates involved with installing home charging stations and things like that. So I'm hopeful that as adoption increases, or as, you know, more and more people buy these things, that the government bureaucracy, as you say, sort of gets out of its own way, so people can actually take advantage of the things that they're hoping to get here.
Yeah, there is the larger issue of, should there be these incentives, and should taxpayers foot the bill for people buying very, very expensive cars? But I guess that's for another day. There is certainly good news for Tesla in this study. The Tesla Model 3 ranks the highest overall in the premium battery electric vehicle segment in terms of overall satisfaction, and the Model Y was right there. On the mass market side, the Kia Niro EV, which is currently sitting in my driveway, I tested it this past week, is the tops for the second consecutive year, and the Mach-E is in second place. What's your reaction to those findings?
Well, I'm not surprised to hear that the Niro did very well. It's got great value. You know, the form factor works well. And we've talked at length about the Mach-E. I tested one just about 6 months ago or so. And Ford did a great job. You know, regardless of how you feel about the Mustang name being used on an EV, the form factor, the value, and the packaging just works. So I think both of those are well-deserved.
I think so as well. Well, here's another story. Volkswagen of America has bid a fond farewell to the Passat. They have been building the Passat in Chattanooga, Tennessee for many, many years now. And over time, in the United States, more than 1.8 million Passat models have been sold. This is since 1974. The interesting thing, though, is the way Volkswagen counts this, or at least it was interesting to me, because they count Passats as vehicles that had names other than Passat. A very similar model had the Dasher name back in the day, if you remember the Volkswagen Dasher, and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen. I guess those weren't other Volkswagens, but there was the Quantum also, and that counts in the Passat overall total. So I think there's some questions about that. I think you and I, though, agree on the fact that the Passat, as it is now, is quite a good vehicle.
It is. They've had plenty of time to refine the formula, and they got it just right. But, you know, it's not surprising to see it sort of going away, because Volkswagen has or had the CC years ago, which was another sort of midsize, larger car, and now they have the Arteon. So the Passat doesn't really have a solid home in the Volkswagen lineup, but I'm still sad to see it go.
Well, you and me both, but, you know, a bid a fond farewell to the Passat. And when we come back, Chris will be talking about the 2022 Honda Civic Si, really an exciting vehicle, and also North American Car of the Year. And I was driving a really exciting vehicle as well, the 2022 Kia EV6, their brand new electric vehicle. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you, and thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad back with you, and it is road test time, and wowee, do we have cool vehicles. We typically have wonderful vehicles to talk about. But this time around, I think we've got some spectacular vehicles to chat about. And the Honda Civic Si is one of my favorite new vehicles. And Chris, you were driving it in the wilds of Maine in the winter, the brown season that you're dealing with, dirty snow out there. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, I should have clarified earlier. It's really more mud season when the snow kind of melts, but that's a totally different subject for another day. But in any case, yeah, I was driving the 2022 Honda Civic Si. This is the brand new car. It just came out, I don't know, a couple months ago, started hitting the market. It was in a bright orange color, which I got to tell you, was not only eye-catching, but I really enjoyed driving such a brightly colored car in the winter here because, you know, all that salt and everything didn't do much to cover it up, and it was just a cheerful looking car. But the Honda Civic Si has got a starting price of around $28,000. It comes in just around, I think, $28,300. It's got a turbocharged 1.5-liter four-cylinder engine making 200 horsepower and 192 pound-feet of torque, exclusively through a six-speed manual transmission with rev-matching technology. And Jack, I got to be honest with you, I think this is one of my favorite manual transmissions I've driven probably in the last 5 years or so. It's got a great feel, nice notchy mechanical feel to it, nice confidence, and the rev matching tech works really well. So I wanted to get your feeling on the SI's manual transmission, because I know we don't get to test very many of these anymore.
You know, I loved it. It's kind of a throwback, and you can make the case that automatics are faster, especially dual-clutch automatics are faster these days. Even some non-dual clutches are quite fast in terms of their shifting and the precision of their shifting. But there's something nice about changing the gear yourself, and to have rev matching, I was never, super great at doing that, you know, the heel and toe and blipping the throttle and making all that happen. So the fact that the car does it for me now is a nice little crutch that I use.
I agree. I was actually talking with my 9-year-old daughter about that this morning, and she was very bored, but I was able to explain rev matching to a 9-year-old. So that was very, very nice of her. But the car rides on 18-inch wheels, and this is what I wanted to point out. A lot of newer cars, especially high-performance cars, have giant wheels, and I know the Civic's a little bit smaller, but I think 18-inch wheels are a sweet spot for a car this size, because you get the look and you get the performance of a larger wheel, but you don't get a harsh ride, especially I talk about our roads here in Maine in winter where the plows tear up, potholes and everything else. And the extra rubber on the sidewall of the tires with the 18-inch wheels was a really welcome addition for the car. I was afraid it was going to be kind of bone jarring to drive around here, but it worked really well. And that balance goes beyond just the wheel size and the ride quality. Because 200 horsepower, I should say, is a sweet spot for a car of this size. You know, it's not absurdly fast, but it feels very lively. It's got plenty of torque, 192 pound-feet. The wheel size, as I mentioned, and the handling is balanced with comfort, so that you get a nice turn-in, very responsive steering feel. But it's not, again, a ride that is very harsh, especially with the potholes and everything inside. And this is where I'm going to talk about my height. You know, I love you. I know that you love to hear me talk about being 6 feet tall, Jack. But
are you 6 feet tall, Chris? I had never heard that before.
Yes,
you,
I am.
You got to be kidding me. You look much taller. and you're better looking, too.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm blushing now. But I think this is a case where the car shows its size, especially in the front seat. So it's got very nicely bolstered. They look great. Sport seats with heavy hip supports. And at 6 feet tall, there's no adjustable headrest. So my head hits in an awkward space on the seat. I know you don't lean your head back while you're driving, but it's a little bit awkward there. And then this has more to do with my width than my height, but I think I'm a little too wide for the seats. So my hips ended up being dug into by the bolsters. On the flip side of that, the seating material is a nice cloth that really grips you into the seat with the bolsters. So there's a lot of great support. I think that, the width issue is more my fault and having been sitting around in the pandemic for the last 2 years than it is the car. So I won't fault it for that. On the technology front, it's got a 9-inch touchscreen, wireless Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. We talked about this at length in recent weeks. I think Honda does it just as well as anybody else. Instantaneous connection when I start the car with my iPhone. No real lag there. So while I prefer wired connections in many cars, I think the wireless connection here works well. It's got a 12-speaker Bose audio system as standard and a full suite of advanced safety gear. And my car also had blind spot monitoring. So, Jack, I'll say this in closing. I think that Honda hit a sweet spot here, as they have with many Hondas of the SI variants. But I think this is sort of the perfection or the pinnacle of that. For the price at $28,000, it's got the performance and the looks and the practicality. So I strongly recommend this car. Can't get enough of it.
Yeah, one of the things I said when the Honda Civic won North American Car of the Year, and of course, as people have heard endlessly on the show, I'm on the jury, and I care about what we choose as North American Car of the Year. I think this is a great choice. I voted very strongly for this vehicle. I gave it all 10 of my points that I contributed, along with the 49 other jurors. And I just think it's a great all-around vehicle, not just the SI, but the Civic in general. The SI, in a lot of ways, is the epitome of it, though. And you're absolutely spot on with your assessment of this car. It's hard to overpraise the Honda Civic. It's just a wonderful, wonderful vehicle. And now I'll talk about the Kia EV6. Which hopes to gain that kind of recognition over time. And it is the first step in Kia's transformation from a producer of conventional internal combustion engine vehicles to battery electrics. Kia really wants to do that. In fact, kind of ironically, they took the name Motors out of their name, although now they're building cars with motors, finally, as opposed to engines. internal combustion engines, but that's neither here nor there, I suppose. They want the EV6 not only to compete against other EVs, other electric vehicles, but they also expect it will bring a lot of buyers from traditional vehicles into the EV fold. They think the vast majority of EV6 customers will be first-time electric vehicle buyers, so that's an important distinction. And to do that, they have to provide all that a typical conventional vehicle buyer would need. The EV6 is a 5-passenger vehicle, and it kind of cuts across segments. It's one part hatchback, one part crossover utility. Interestingly, the wheelbase is as long as the midsize Kia Telluride, so that's a long, long wheelbase. And it has very different battery electric architecture. It kind of obsoletes in some ways many of the electric vehicles that have come before it. The front seating position is higher than a typical hatchback, so that makes getting in and out easy. As we get older, we really care about that. And it, of course, offers that elevated command of the road feeling that you like from the driver's seat. And it has a couple powertrain choices. They're all battery electric, though. Interesting ones. This is a vehicle built on the electric global modular platform that Kia shares with Hyundai. So under the skin, it has a lot in common with the Hyundai Ioniq 5. But what I found, having driven both of those vehicles pretty extensively, is the EV6 is very different from the Ioniq 5. It has a different character to it. One of the technical advances, though, that they share is this 800-volt multi-charging, going to an 800-volt system, essentially doubling the voltage of most modern EVs, is a big, big change, a big technical change. And one of the things it enables the vehicle to do is go from a 10% battery charge to an 80% charge in less than 18 minutes. This is using a DC fast charger. Of course, you won't have a DC fast charger at home. But I know, Chris, you and I have talked about the lack of infrastructure in Maine and this preventing you from considering an EV. Would this help change your mind a little bit if you could do a big recharge in just 20 minutes or so?
I think so, because that then makes the, we have a lot of, you know, sort of side charge. I don't know the right term here. They're just chargers like at the grocery store or next to like a, you know, a retail outlet. So that sort of opens up the usability of those chargers a little bit more so that it makes it more practical to stop and, you know, run in a grocery shop and charge your car while you're doing that. It also makes it easier to charge at home. So you're not having to plan your whole day around when you're going to get in that extra 50% of battery or whatever. So, you know, while more physical infrastructure is helpful, I think these steps taken by the automakers are the next best thing, at least in the interim.
Couldn't agree more. The EV6 will be available in 3 different trim levels, and it's actually available now. If you go into your Kia dealer, you might be able to see an EV6. They're going to be sold all across the country in all 50 states, which makes it a little different than a lot of electric vehicles out there. But it's in 3 trim levels, starting with the base model is called the Light, and then there is the Wind, and then the top level is the GT line. Why they didn't call them Earth, Wind, and Fire, I'm not sure. I think they missed a bet there, but you know, that's an allusion from music from way, way back, from my era. They have different size battery packs. There is both rear drive and all-wheel drive available, and the range kind of depends on the one you pick, and it goes from 274 miles to the highest range is 320 miles. Since time is limited, let me dive right into the overall driving impression. This is a vehicle that has a great interior, very, very roomy, much roomier than you would think it would be. But I think the fascinating thing is really the driving. This vehicle is fast, but not fast in the traditional sense of being fast. Because it has all these batteries, heavy batteries low in the chassis, it feels very, very different. I would liken it to a slot car. You can do one pedal driving in this vehicle, which is really a revelation. You just, when you get off the accelerator, it starts to slow. So a really fascinating vehicle. I wish we had more time to talk about it. We will maybe do that in an upcoming version of America on the Road. But this is a vehicle I like a lot. I really, in a lot of ways, liked it much more than I like the Hyundai Ioniq 5, which is interesting because they share so much mechanically. And I really think it is going to change the way people think about Kia. The major question I have is, will people spend $40,000, $50,000, or even $60,000 on a Kia vehicle? And that remains to be seen.
I certainly hope so, because I would like to see more of them.
And when we come back, we will be interviewing Dan Ahern. He is the Car Bravo Senior Manager, talking about buying used cars at GM dealers and not necessarily GM used cars. So that's a fascinating subject. We'll be chatting with him about. Stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nered. And thanks so much for being with us right here on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nered with you. And we have a terrific guest for you. And this terrific guest is going to be talking about a topic that's on everybody's lips, and that is the availability of new and used cars in the marketplace, particularly used cars. It has become a major issue out there, and General Motors has a solution to it. His name is Dan Ahern. He is the Car Bravo Senior Manager. Number one, Dan, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us, Jack. I really appreciate it.
Before you even tell us what Car Bravo is, and we certainly want to get into that, I mean, tell us what the situation is with most General Motors dealers right now and dealers in general facing inventory shortages on both the new and used car side. What's it like for them?
Thanks, Jack. So it is, you know, it is touchy. You know, I think, you know, your audience is probably going by dealerships and they're seeing that there's a lot of open space. But you know, that's mostly on the new side. On the used side, you know, because the chip shortage and the other things don't affect those as much, we're not seeing as huge a decline in available inventory. Plus, you know, dealers are being very cognizant of that, and a lot are out there, you know, trying to purchase customers' vehicles and whatnot. So our inventory is down on used, but it's not near as significant as it is. So, you know, it's a limited selection, but, you know, there's a lot of good opportunities out there too.
You are a big veteran, a longtime veteran of this industry, and particularly on the retail side. And I am not certain that our audience of consumers recognizes how important the used car business is to the typical new car dealer. I think they look at a new car dealer as selling new cars and used cars is just a sideline. But really, in terms of profits, used cars is a big, big area for most new car dealers. Can you expand on that a little bit and tell us a little bit more about that?
Thanks for the lead there, Jack, but you're exactly right. I mean, the dealers that we worked with on this project, you know, their comment would be around the lines of a successful new car dealer has a successful used car operation. So that's kind of the recap of it. But, you know, it's all of those pieces that go into, you know, them taking a trade, reconditioning the car, the service capabilities, and all of those pieces. So, you know, used cars are vital. They're also the progression. And that's, you know, what we're talking about with Car Bravo too, is that I might be at a certain time, either from an income or an age or family situation, and I'm buying a used car right now. And then I might transition into a newer used car, and then I might eventually transition into a new car. So, you know, that's really important for the dealership to have, you know, the capability of moving customers along that path. And then the other part of that on used vehicles is the capability for a GM dealer to sell non-GM cars. And that's a big part of what we're doing with Car Bravo as well, is having that halo that, you know, these participating dealers are going to sell non-GM cars on the Car Bravo platform.
Yeah, let's dive into that. Let's dive into what Car Bravo is, because you're introducing that. General Motors is introducing Car Bravo, and you're a senior manager of Car Bravo. So give our listeners a quick snapshot of what Car Bravo is and what it's designed to do.
So Jack, I'll break it into, you know, kind of the three components, and then, you know, we can probably talk more about specifics, but it's about a large selection for the customers. Think of, you know, combining dealer inventory with our inventory. So now we have tens of thousands of cars for customers to select from. And they're both, again, GM and non-GM vehicles. But the other really key component of Car Bravo is an e-commerce platform. So the capability for a customer to go in and do a lot of the transactional pieces that they want to do, including all of them, if that's what they choose to do, online. Now, you know, the majority, like 90% of the customers still want a dealership interaction, whether that's with a test drive, whether that's service, et cetera. So, you know, we think with CarBravo that you get the opportunity to do all of those, whatever the customer is demanding. So, you know, the convenience piece of, you know, the digital retail platform in CarBravo is big. And then the ownership piece, the last piece of this is around making sure that we maintain that relationship, as I was talking about the transition from, you know, used into new. But, you know, peace of mind with warranties, with trials on XM, OnStar, with roadside and courtesy, things that you get when you buy a new car that will be offered on CarBravo.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big reasons that people buy new cars rather than used cars is the warranty and peace of mind that they get buying a new car that they have not typically gotten with the used vehicle. Certified pre-owned cars have addressed that for some time, but now it seems like you're taking that to an even greater level with CarBravo. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, Jack. So, you know, we've actually expanded the parameters of I would say, the kind of the typical OEM certified program, in that the first level of cars are up to 10 years and up to 100,000 miles, which most manufacturers are in the 6 years and 75 to 80,000 miles. So, you know, we've expanded the population into some of those older cars. And then we'll have a smaller warranty on an older section, which in most instances makes up about 10 to 15% of a dealer's used cars. But there's still an expectation for that customer to have some peace of mind with a warranty. So these are cars that are 10 years to 15 years and 100,000 miles to 150,000 miles, you know, that we'll offer a limited powertrain warranty on for customers, again, in that category, to give them some peace of mind. So
tell us a little bit about, or more than a little bit, if you'd like, about what the experience is when a customer goes online to CarBravo, and number one, how to get there, but then what they're going to see when they get there. I imagine they're going to see a lot of inventory, a lot of vehicles available for sale, a lot of used vehicles available for sale. Describe that for us, would you?
Great, Jack. So I guess, you know, right now, it'll eventually, when we launch, and that'll be in late spring, early summer, it'll be CarBravo.com. A customer would go to CarBravo.com. They have a variety of options. You know, it'll hit the splash page. They're going to be able to see the, you know, benefits of CarBravo with these warranties and the after purchase benefits. But more importantly, when they're looking for a car, you know, they're going to be able to filter exactly how they want to get the, you know, jewel that they want. So, you know, they can do a 20-mile radius of their IP location. They can go out broader if they're, you know, again, really looking for additional vehicles. If they're looking for an SUV, a sedan, they can filter for that. So we're going to have tens of thousands of cars that a customer's going to be able to drill down to say, I'm looking for an SUV, could be a Ford, could be a Toyota, could be a General Motors, that has less than 70,000 miles, that is black, you know, with a gray interior. So again, it really puts the power of the selection to the consumer. And then once I've selected my car, now I can go to the next phase is, I want to get approved for credit, or I want to be approved for a loan on this car. They can do that online. And, you know, all of the things that are done typically in dealerships can be done in most states, you know, through the platform. So I can, you know, send back documentation and the things that I need to complete the sale. And then I can make options. So I might want more warranty than what's being provided. I might want home delivery. I might want an accessory. So they can select those and then they can check out and they can, you know, from there, get the vehicle delivered to their office, home, wherever they're, you know, looking to get the vehicle delivered. Or they can again transition out of any of that during that time frame with all of that still kept in the system to the dealership to either do a test drive, you know, or ask questions of the salesperson or take some of the documentation into the store if that's what they want to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's a beautiful idea because then they don't have to start all over again when they go into the store. And that's a big sticking point, as you know. Let's talk a little bit about the online and maybe end-to-end online purchase. You know, a lot of companies are advertising heavily on TV for used cars. Carvana, Vroom are out there talking about this experience. They have limited inventory because they only have the inventory that they own. You're going to leverage the inventory of potentially every GM dealer out there. Tell us a little bit about how that system can work if you want to buy a used car totally online.
So, you know, Jack, the customer would, again, go in and they would select that car. The other thing that you started to reference there is, let's say they have a trade too, right? So we have a mechanism very similar to other ones that are out there where you're going to type in your plate, your license plate or the VIN number. It's going to come back with an offer. So, you know, you could go out, you could do that. You could come back. And now, again, that's loaded in the system. This customer has a trade that's worth $7,000. You know, customer agrees to that as they're going. They start off with a $20,000 car. They have a $7,000 trade, and there's $13,000. They can apply for credit. Then they can, you know, look at, again, those additional options. And then they can check out, you know, as they're going through the process and end up with home delivery. So. But pretty slick, yeah. You know, again, especially the trade-in piece of that, it makes it really convenient for a customer.
It seems very convenient. Let's talk a little bit about pricing and negotiation. I think a lot of consumers seek out the online experience expecting that they're going to get a one-price kind of situation. It doesn't sound to me like what you're proposing here is one price, though. I think some negotiation is possible here. Tell us how that would work.
Yeah, Jack, good question. And you know, from what we've seen, and this is similar to other platforms that are out there, it's transparent pricing. So when a customer sees it, whether it's on the lot, whether it's on the website, whether it's on a third-party provider, that they see the same price as they go. And to your point, you know, there will be negotiation in those. You know, a customer could come in with a trade as an example. So there'll be things that will be, but it's transparent pricing that transitions into, okay, where do we negotiate from in that starting price? But, you know, all the platforms that are out there have a very similar, you know, experience from the standpoint of having transparent pricing.
How do consumers find out what dealers are participating in Car Bravo and what kind of participation do you expect from General Motors dealers around the country? Because you have literally thousands of dealers out there.
We just opened enrollment, Jack. So, you know, we're finalizing that and it'll be, you know, a few weeks from now before we're really, so far the response has been very good. And how they would find them, you know, on the Car Bravo site, or even on the dealers' site websites, they would appear as a Car Bravo you know, certified dealer, as well as, again, back on the Tier 1. Right now, we don't have a site that aggregates our dealers' inventory, so you know that Tier 1 experience will be something that'll be new, you know, new to the to any OEM that's out there doing this, that again will drive traffic to those stores. But they'll see in both of those instances, again, whether it's the dealer's website or our website, you know, dealers will be listed there, and customers can select from a variety of dealerships across the country.
Terrific. Again, refresh our memory as to when Car Bravo will go online and how consumers can access it when that happens, Dan.
Yeah, we're late spring, early summer, and it will be carbravo.com.
Terrific. Well, it sounds like a great new way to buy a used vehicle and get a lot of peace of mind, get a new car kind of peace of mind when you buy that used vehicle. So it seems perfectly in tune with the times. Dan Ahern, Car Bravo Senior Manager, thanks so much for being with us. We really do appreciate you joining us.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nered with you. And it is question and answer time, our final segment of this week's show. And the time goes so fast when I'm talking with Chris Teague. I always enjoy that. Listener question time, and we love taking your listener questions, so keep them coming into us. Here's a question from Eugene. Eugene is in Overland, Kansas, and this is what Eugene says. I want to buck the trend and buy a mid-sized sedan instead of an SUV. I think they're a better bargain right now. Can you suggest some models I should look at? Well, what's your take on that, car expert Chris Teague?
Ooh, yeah, I know we talk a lot about people gravitating to SUVs and pickup trucks, but there are a whole lot of midsize sedans out there that probably would make a lot of people happy. So the newer Toyota Camrys are a great pick these days. You can get one with a V6 that is quite the rocket ship. The Hyundai Sonata is a great pick. The latest ones, the newest styling is quite a head turner, especially with those LED lights up front. And if you can get in a hybrid, then you're going to end up getting incredible fuel economy. Jack, I think there are some great choices out there.
And one you didn't mention is one we talked about on the show very recently, and that's the Honda Accord and the Honda Accord Hybrid specifically. I really like that vehicle. I drove it for some 600 miles fairly recently, and not only was the fuel economy great, but the overall driving experience was really, really good. And I think different from some hybrids out there, I think there's a lot of value in that vehicle. Fun to drive, fuel economy is really incredible. And so I think there are a lot of good choices among the sedans right now. Well, that is our show for today. Our thanks to Chris Teague. He always does a great job as co-host. He needn't thank me for being with us. We love having him as our teammate on the show. But Chris, I enjoy talking with you.
I enjoyed speaking with you as well, Jack, and I will thank you for having me because it is a privilege, and thanks everybody for listening. I will say that if you like what you heard and you want to take us with you wherever you go, you can head to sportsmapradio.com, check out the Saturday morning schedule, and there you can find our podcast directory, both on Apple Podcasts and on other platforms.
We'd love to have you join us anytime. Thank you so much for being with us on the Sports Map Radio Network broadcast. And thanks for listening to the podcast as well. We'd love to have you join us whenever you want, in any way you want. So join us again next time for another edition of America on the Road. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at mercuryinsurance.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.